Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Michelle Hansen has devoted her life to studying the language of shells. After many years of interpreting seashells for family and friends, Michelle's success led her to take this unique talent to the public. She also created a program to teach seashell divination to others. Now, what if those seashells we admire and collect at the beach could actually tell us something about our hidden thoughts, beliefs, and attitudes? Michelle's innate sensitivity, her science background, and the significant knowledge she has acquired from her lifelong study of her seashell partners makes her uniquely qualified to be known as the shell with a voice, serving as their ambassadors to the rest of the world. Michelle is the author of Ocean Oracle, What Seashells Reveal About Our True Nature, A Bridge to Learning About the Secret Language, and Ocean Wisdom, Lessons from the Seashell Kingdom, teaching us about the mysteries of the ocean and unlocking the mysteries of self through the study of seashells. My pleasure to welcome back to This Week in America the ambassador of the Seashell Kingdom, Michelle Shelley Hansen. Michelle, welcome back to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It is our pleasure to have you back. So much more to talk about. In the two interviews we've done before with Shelley, you'll find on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, at any of the podcast platforms around the country, Apple, Amazon, Google, all of those will have the program. And again, you can get them on our website. This is the third time Shelley has been with us. And Shelley, it's been really interesting as we go through those programs that the Seashell Kingdom is there assisting us, if we let it, if we listen, to are navigating our way through lives. You shared some of the empowering readings your clients received working with Seashell Partners. The insights they gained were really transformed their lives forever. And I hear sometimes you have to have, you've learned to have tissues out on the table because sometimes these are so really relatable to these people and so important in their lives that it also brings tears of healing. This really is emotional, isn't it?
It very much so, yes.
And you'll find out during the course of the program today. Now, Shelley worked with seashells, said it constantly pushed her out of her comfort zone. Once you decoded the message from your shells, you were content to limit it to family and friends for several years. What pushed you to share this information with a wider audience? I mean, strangers. What was it that you decided to take this public and really help so many other people?
Well, I was a very shy person, I mean, painfully shy. To give you an idea, when I was in college, my English professor came into class toward the end of the semester and pointed to two people, I was one of them, and said, these were the only two people who could talk today because we hadn't said anything all year.
Oh, geez.
So it was noticeable that I never spoke up. So for me to come to the place where now I'm the shell with a voice, that was a huge journey pushing me. And I have this little guy, this is called a green tree snail, to thank for that. When this came into my life, my brother had been living in Papua New Guinea. And when he came back to the States, he gifted me with this shell. Now it's green because these are land snails. They have lungs. They live among the leaves in Papua New Guinea, and there are times of the year where the climate, they call it the dry season, it's very hot, very dry. It's intolerable for these guys. So what they do is they retreat into their shell. Oh, let me show you this side.
Okay.
So when they retreat, at the bottom of the shell where it's an opening here, they plug that up with mucus. It's called an epiphragm. And that allows them to retain the moisture inside their shell. And then they lower their metabolism because they are going to have to exist for the entire dry season without food, without water. That means it could be months, it could even be a year. Now, I know that sounds like a long time to go without food and water, but the most amazing example I'd ever heard of was in 1846, so this is documented, someone sent two shells from the deserts of Egypt to the British Museum of Natural History, and they placed them in a display case under glass, 1846. In 1850, someone looked at the shells and noticed the mucus plug, the epiphragm, and thought, there's a live snail inside this for 4 years.
Wow.
And so they took off the glass, took off the display to be able to remove the shell from that card, put it in a petri dish of water with a little cabbage leaf, and the snail came out of its shell and started nibbling on the cabbage leaf, and it lived another 2 years. So that's their capacity to be able to almost go into a coma state.
Yes.
Now, with the green tree snail, they retreat into their shell, lowering their metabolism until the rainy season, whenever that may be. So this represents that change of comfort zone. And with the snails, we're talking about climate. But with people, it's the change in your belief around certain situations. So for me, being a very shy person, to a painfully shy person, as you saw, they had their work cut out for them to be able to push me to be willing to speak up and become their ambassador. And the first thing that happened after I got this shell was I lost my job. I worked at a business where the owner sold not only her business, but her territory. You couldn't open another business in the same area. And I wondered, what am I going to do? And a friend suggested, because I had been doing readings for friends and family, to advertise my shell reading. So I put a business card sized ad in a metaphysical magazine. And the editor called me. I'm going to hold this up every time. This pushed me because the editor asked me to write an article about seashell divination. And that was brand new for me, but I did that. Then she requested another. And then pretty soon, she was asking if I would write a column where I would submit an article for every issue. And I got acclimated. It always happens with these guys. You get pushed, then you get acclimated. And then this went into overdrive because the editor asked when, not if, when I would be on her radio show. And that, to me, was really scary, going that public. But I thought, you know what? I can tell people about the cones. They're so deadly. I want to be able to warn them to sort of admire from a distance. And the reason they're so deadly is cones, some species, eat fish. So their tooth is shaped like a harpoon, and it's connected to a sac of poison. And they can inject the poison into the fish, which prevents the fish from mounting any kind of response.
Oh, yes.
And then each of the internal organs would shut down and the snail could end up eating the fish. But if that harpoon was injected into a person, there might be localized pain at first, but it can cause respiratory distress and even in some species, death. There's one cone shell. It's called the cigarette snail because you just have time to smoke a cigarette before you die. So I'm talking about this to the host of the radio show. And as a service to her audience, she said, well, what do they look like? And I reached down and I picked up a picture and I held it to the microphone in front of me for the radio. So I'm holding a picture to the microphone. And the radio engineer fell off his chair laughing. And he said, you can't show pictures on the radio. So that was my first experience. Then I was invited to be on a TV show. And I should say, this is back in the day where it was common for people to have a TV or a radio show. They were local and they would rent the studio from the station. So this TV show, the host came to my home for a pre-interview, got an idea of what I was doing with the shells, and a few weeks later, I showed up at the studio, and he introduced me to his co-host, this young woman, who used to be working with him but had moved out of the area, so she was just visiting that night, which turned out to be wonderful because during the first commercial break, the host says to me, I'm sick. I have to go home. So as he's leaving, which I didn't think a host could do.
Rare.
The co-host says, I don't know who you are. I don't know what to ask you. And so I suggested she could ask me what the meanings were for some of the shells that I brought with me. So we come out of commercial and she starts asking me about the meanings. And the phone rings. I didn't realize it's a call-in show. And the man on the other line says, has anyone ever called you an idiot? And I thought he was being protective. I said, not to my face. And then he proceeded to declare that in his eyes, I was such an idiot. So now the co-host is appalled and she's not going to answer the phone anymore. Meanwhile, the host has gone home. He's sick, but he tunes in and he sees this disaster. Like, she doesn't know what to ask me. She wasn't privy to the pre-interview. So he calls to be able to take over guiding the interview, only she's not answering the phone. So he calls into the office and they pipe his voice into the studio. And I'm looking around and I end up talking to this disembodied person. I mean, it was surreal. So that was my first TV show.
Wow.
For the second TV show, I was at a psychic fair and I met this woman and we had a wonderful conversation. She told me she had a TV show and she lived near the ocean. So I thought, this is going to be great because those people who are tuning in at her local show already know about shells. And when I arrived and did the interview, she stayed for the whole interview. So that was
good.
Progress.
Good.
However, I hold up shells. And about midway through, I was holding up a shell, expecting the cameraman to zoom in. And there was no cameraman. He left the studio. Apparently, when you start the show, he made sure the host and the guest are in frame.
Oh, yes.
And then he leaves.
He left.
So the third time I was invited to be on a TV show, I was reluctant at this point. The host came for a pre-interview, and she asked me if I had any questions. And I said, I have two. Will you stay for the whole show, and will your cameraman? And she looked at me like, what kind of shows have you been on? But it turned out this was the host. In the last interview, I mentioned a TV host where she related so strongly to the shells. They revealed she couldn't swim. They revealed she was blind in one eye. And it was a really empowering reading for her about being in denial about something. And then her cameraman was drawn to the shell, and it revealed his relationship with his brother, bailing him out, and that was getting old. And because of those readings, I shifted my comfort zone around the whole idea of being interviewed and speaking to the public that way. And now I embrace it. I love the opportunity to be able to share, and I can show pictures, I can show shells, and I'm reaching more than just my local area. So that's how much they pushed me to where I'm now comfortable doing this.
And I'm staying for the full interview. I'm not leaving halfway through that. So I am here for the duration of our conversation. It's amazing you persisted after going through all of that. What nightmares you went through with the first two shows. If you're just joining us, our guest is someone who's been with us two times before, Michelle Hansen. Her two books are available wherever books are sold. I'll mention both of them. I'll do it right now, Ocean Oracle. And the second book is Ocean Wisdom. They're available at our website, which is oceanoracle.com. As a result of those early radio TV shows, how was it when you were contacted by strangers? What was that like? And can you recall any early readings when you really got a reaction from them?
Yes, I have to admit, I had been reading for friends and family, and for me, the jury was out. I was wondering if somehow I might have been manipulating the messages because I knew these people.
Oh, yes.
So for a stranger to come, I wouldn't know anything. And after the radio show, three women came together, and I do private readings. So after the first two, the third woman had put out her shells, and it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare of abuse. It was awful. And she said, as I was giving her the information that I was seeing, She did have a boyfriend who wanted her to hug him more. That's not what I was seeing. So I thought, you know what? This is what I thought. It's a stranger. I must have been manipulating the messages. So I said to her, would you look back and just see if there are any other shells that get your attention? Because I thought maybe it would say, never mind, we're going in a different direction. And she picked some more shells and it just doubled down. She had the shell for your rights are violated. So I was going to end the reading and just admit I couldn't do a reading for her, when all of a sudden she burst into tears. And she said, this section of the reading, this is my father who abused me and my sister. And over here, this is my husband who held a gun to my head. And she's crying so profusely and said, nobody knows this. The women in the other room don't know this. So how do the shells know? And I said, they know because you know. This is you, your hidden thoughts, talking to you. And I knew that the shells were trying to reveal some belief she held that was limiting her, but I could see the pain on her face. And I didn't want to continue. But she pushed back her chair and she walked over to the cabinet of shells and she just started pointing to shells without saying anything. So I walked up beside her and I just started translating. And she was pointing to the shell about forgiveness. And I thought, oh, she's trying to find a way to forgive them. But that wasn't the forgiveness for forgiving others. She was pointing to the shell of self-forgiveness. And I'm wondering, why does she need to forgive herself? But when you looked at the other shells, what happened was her hidden belief that was impacting her life was she had convinced herself she caused this. She was so powerful, she made them behave that way. That was preferable to thinking she was a victim and powerless. And that's why she was seeking self-forgiveness for making them do this, which put her in a position of power. And when this all came out in the reading, she realized it wasn't her fault. And she left willing to go seek therapy. And I was on cloud nine because I saw how much the shells had helped this stranger. And I hadn't manipulated anything. And that made me feel like I can trust them. I can trust and continue doing this with strangers.
When I mentioned before, what you do is transformative in dealing with people. There's a beautiful example of that, where this really unlocked a whole new life for her. It had to change things for her and for you, it sounds like, as well.
Very much so for me, yes. It kept giving me the comfort to keep going. As you said, they had to keep pushing me, but I had reason to. I felt so good that they had helped her.
Well, taking the message to so many people and continuing to do that, Michelle Hansen, our guest on the program, our website, oceanoracle.com. At the website, you, of course, can order the books, and we'll talk about those as we go through the conversation. But so much information there as well, and you can contact Michelle through her website, Michelle Hansen. That's oceanoracle.com. When you're doing readings for the public, was there ever a time when you thought you needed to go back and talk to more people to learn more information that you can teach others, sort of a postgraduate work that you're going through?
I was constantly looking for a teacher. I mean, it was almost comical because what would happen is I would hear someone say something and I'd say, where'd you learn that? I want to study with that person. And they would trace it back. And the source always turned out to be someone who either read something I wrote or attended a seminar that I gave. It kept coming back to me, to the point where the most extreme, I lived in Massachusetts. I was in Florida giving a seminar, and a woman attending said she had a friend in Vermont who told her there was a shell reader there, and her name was Shelley. And I said, oh my gosh, I live in Massachusetts. When I get back, I really want to be able to study with this woman. We even have the same first name. We have so much in common. Could you talk to your friend in Vermont and see if you can get me more information? And during a break in the seminar, she came back to me and she had this confused look on her face. And she said, Shelley, isn't your last name Hansen? I said, yes, why? And she said, I talked to my friend in Vermont, and the Shell reader's name is Shelley Hansen. And I thought, how can that be? And what happened was the Metaphysical magazine where I had my column that I thought was local to my little area of Massachusetts had made its way to Vermont. So every time I was looking for a teacher, it would always come back to me. And I finally realized the Shells were my teachers. And that's why I say teachers don't always come in human bodies.
Interesting how that all evolved. You're looking for a teacher, someone to teach you something, and you find out the best teachers people are recommending yourself. So that really is a strange story, and really talks about what you've been able to do and the lives that you've been able to touch. I mentioned in the beginning you were a scientist studying these shells all of your life. Did you ever step away from science, and how important is that science background into what you're doing?
Okay. Big time change of comfort zone, because I was strictly sticking to science. And so the green tree snail had a lot of work on this one. The first thing that happened, one of my shells broke. And I had another shell where I had many copies of it. So I let one be the stand-in for the broken shell. And that day the client comes. Now I've got 500 shells to choose from. She picks the stand-in shell. They're all new to her. So it amazed me she would do that. And I used the message that was connected to the broken shell. And it was a transformative reading, and I wondered, why did that work? And I started to learn about the value of intention. And then two other things happened. One involves the helmet conch. Now, helmet conchs were named that because someone thought they resembled the helmets of ancient warriors. So when I was first decoding the language, to me, this meant someone willing to fight for you, you know, an ally or a champion on your behalf. So that was its meaning. Years later, I read a story by a marine biologist. Some people may remember me talking about this. And it was involving three helmet conchs. One on its side. Now, this one's in danger. Any predator could come get it. It's exposed. Or even if left alone, it can't right itself to go travel and get food. The other two were maybe 16 feet away in a triangle. And he tells the story of how the other two come over to the one who's on its side. Like little bulldozers, they dig out a furrow in the sand to loosen him up. They come around behind, climb up, turn him over, and save him. And just to quickly show for anyone who hasn't seen this yet, here you see what he noticed. The one in trouble is on its side. Here they've loosened the sand and they're coming around behind, climb up, turn him over, and save him. So this shell already meant someone willing to fight for you. And now I'm like, oh my God, they come to the rescue. They really are willing to fight for you. So the meaning stayed the same, but I had a whole new reason for it. So that's stuck in my head, like two different paths, but I didn't have to change the meaning at all. This also happened with the marble cone. Now, I mentioned earlier how cones can be so deadly. So I have many different species of cones, and their meanings all relate to some kind of danger. And the marble cone meant ruin and disappointment. Years later, I read about the artist Rembrandt. Now, he did not create many still lifes, but one was called The Shell. It involved the marble cone. And when you make an etching, you use copper metal and acid to eat away at the metal to make your drawing. And then you cover it with ink and use a piece of paper pressed down. And when you take the paper off, you get the reverse image of whatever was on the metal plate. And for most subjects, that probably doesn't matter that it's reversed. But for shells, it's critical. So if you look at this marble cone, it grows in a clockwise direction. It's opening on the right-hand side. That's true of the geography cone. This is, by the way, the cigarette snail. The geography cone opens on the right-hand side. Textile cone opens on the right-hand side. And even shells that aren't cones, most, 99% of them, open on the right-hand side. So Rembrandt's etching being reversed opened on the left-hand side. Let me show you his etching. It's called the shell. And if I turn this.
Yes.
And this is his etching. Here's the marble cone. You see how the opening is reversed from what it should be?
Yep, on the left.
Yes. So, and it's not that Rembrandt didn't know to reverse things, because it's signed. It's very hard to see, but it's signed so his name and date read correctly, which means when he etched it, he reversed his name and date so they turn out right on the print. But I couldn't help but thinking how ironic that his etching is ruined of the shell that means ruin and disappointment.
Oh, yes.
And again, I didn't have to change the meaning, but now instead of coming from the behavior of the animal being so dangerous, and that's why it had the meaning of ruin and disappointment, now coming from interactions with humans throughout history, Rembrandt, it kept the same meaning. And because these meanings didn't have to change with the helmet conch, with the marble cone, it made me more comfortable with stepping away from the science. And I could start to use intuition more when I didn't have a scientific basis for a meaning.
Interesting how that evolved and where you are. And if you're listening to this at a podcast radio, if you go to thisweekinamerica.us, the videos, you will be able to find the video and see exactly what Michelle is talking about. It's published on YouTube. You don't need to go to our website necessarily. Just Google it and you'll find the video and be able to watch. And Michelle's website, by the way, oceanoracle.com. The last interview, you talked about teachings in the ocean wisdom, the one specific on love. Curious to know about others, and looking through the table of comments, there are master teachings on a variety of other topics: pride, struggle, vindication, feeling flawed. You call these questions to consider. Let's take a closer look at some of these. Let's start about talking about wisdom, for example. What do the shells have to offer on the subject of pride?
The subject of pride is courtesy of the sea biscuit. And this is through intuition, but pride means you care so much how you look in other people's eyes. You're up on this pedestal trying to maintain this precarious perch, and that means there's things you can't say or do or you'd fall off the pedestal. So you're trying to be this perfect angel. Picture a halo. You know, you want to look like an angel in someone's eyes.
Yes.
Because there's things you can't say or do, that halo only has to slip a few inches and it becomes a noose. So you can't be in your truth if you're trying so hard to be what you think the other person needs you to be. It's smothering you. It's strangling you. And you may get angry at the person who put you on the pedestal. But eventually, you may wonder, how could I have given that person so much power over me? So these are soul-searching questions with these shells, these master teachings. And with this particular shell about pride, the soul-searching questions are, do I care more about what you think of me or what I think of me? Because I can get you to love me, but I'll look in the mirror and I won't recognize the reflection. Like, that's the price. Is it worth it? And if you decide, you know what, being on that pedestal isn't all I thought it would cut out to be, and you don't want to do that anymore, there's a mantra. In fact, Rick, I have my clients who have this in their readings. Repeat after me. So I'd like you to repeat after me. This is the mantra.
Okay.
It would be other people's.
Other people's.
Opinions of me.
Opinions of me.
Are none of my business.
Are none of my business.
That is so liberating. When you don't care anymore about other people's opinions, you can go back to being in your truth. And that's what Seabiscuit teaches about pride.
You know, it's amazing the lessons that are there. And I didn't know you were going to have me do that. And as I'm saying that in my mind, I'm thinking of I really don't care. And I can't let what other people think about me dictate where I'm going in my life. Michelle Hansen, our guest on the program. I love that this is so relatable, the teachings, what you're talking about, just fascinating so far. Going through some of the other topics in the book, vindication, the need to be right, something probably we all deal with at one point in our lives or another. What's the wisdom from the shells in terms of vindication?
This is really powerful. So vindication comes from this fossil. It's a relative of the octopus. Vindication is about wanting to be right. And so if your self-esteem increases, if someone says, I'm so glad I listened to you, or I wish I'd listened to you because you were right, that can make you feel really good. But when you combine the need to be right with any belief, doesn't matter if it's positive or negative, if it manifests, it's celebrated with equal joy with the part of you that needs to be right. So for instance, if a man thinks he's unlucky in love and all he encounters are unhealthy relationships, he's miserable. But the part of him that needs to be right is saying, told you, you're unlucky in love and it gets to be right. If a woman thinks everybody lies and all she encounters are people who are deceitful, she's not a happy camper. But the part of her that needs to be right is celebrating. So the message, the wisdom connected to vindication is when the need to be right is more important than the need to be happy, it becomes a limitation. So the questions to ask are, how important is it for me to be right? Am I okay with being wrong? Or, if I have to be right, can I change the thing that I'm right about? Either of those will help change that need for vindication.
So much information, so powerful in what Michelle is talking about on the program. Again, her website is oceanoracle.com. Her books are Ocean Oracle, What Seashells Reveal About Our True Nature, and Ocean Wisdom, Lessons from the Seashell Kingdom. Let's go on and talk about, I'll pick another one here. Let's do struggle. We all go through periods of we struggle with something. There's something that gives us problems, and to the point sometimes where we just want to give up. What do the seashells tell us reveal about struggle?
Struggle is interesting because struggle means, by the way, it's from this shell. It's called a Tropidophora. It's a type of land snail. Again, this is intuition, but struggle is nothing is handed to you. Nothing comes easy. And when this is in a reading, it's because the person wouldn't value the achievement unless they felt they earned it. So picture you're at the foot of a mountain and you want to get to the top to see the view. A chauffeur-driven limo could come by and take you to the top of the mountain. Or you could scrape and claw your way through the back trails on foot. And you'd arrive bruised and battered, but the view would be so magnificent because you feel you earned it. And if you just stepped out of the limo, it wouldn't have the same splendor. So with this, imagine a woman walks into a club and an attractive man comes up to her right away and says, the minute you walked in, I needed to get to know you. And an equally attractive man won't give her the time of day. She's going to dismiss the first man and be interested in the second because she has to earn his attention, it will have more
Yeah.
value for her. This is subconscious. She's not thinking this way, but this is how she's wired. So she is going to keep attracting high maintenance partners because that means she has to work to keep their love, to keep their attention. So the question with this shell is, how much do I feel I need to work in order to earn an achievement? If a relationship, a job, an object were just handed to me, could I value it? Because if we choose, this is all soul searching, there's no right or wrong, it's each individual deciding this. But if you choose, the ride in the limo can be just as magnificent when you get to the view.
Just amazing information. Again, Michelle Hansen, our guest on the program, oceanoracle.com. I keep repeating that because as you're listening, as you're watching, I'm sure you're thinking, I really need to read more about her. I really like how she breaks down these problems. Let's talk about something else we go through and then we'll move on. But from the table of contents, one of the items in there is feeling flawed. And I wondered what are the shells telling us about dealing with feeling flawed? Something we probably all go through. Self-doubt is something else that fits in that category. What can we learn from the shells about feeling flawed?
So let me show you the shell first that wisdom comes from. This is called the delicate file clam. So, as with all clams, there's two halves to the shell. It's a
Okay.
clam. Delicate file. Let me show you the animal because this information actually comes from more along the science. The delicate file clam is not a very good swimmer. So it is not going to be able to evade predatory fish. But what it looks like is it has this fringe of tentacles that stick out along the upper edge. And these tentacles break off easily and they're very sticky. Here's an electron microscope of them, and you can see it's almost like Velcro. They have all these
Oh,
ridges, and
yes.
so they wrap around each other and they can stick. So, if this is the first part that breaks off in the fish's mouth, they wrap around each other, stick together, and they seal the fish's mouth shut. Now that buys the clam time. It couldn't swim, but it is so good at producing these stringy filaments. It can make a nest, and it burrows into that little sanctuary to escape the fish. So, if we look at all the parts of what I just said, it's called the delicate file clam. Think of your delicate file as personal information. It had to seal the fish's mouth shut. Like, I don't want that information to get exposed. I don't want it out there. Because if it did, you'd have to burrow into your nest, you'd have to hide away. And when I was working at psychic fairs, quite often, one shell would win the popularity contest of the day, which meant most people that day kept picking the same shell. And that happened with the delicate file clam. And as I was driving home, I kept thinking, what in the world could be so dangerous to have this information out there for all these people? And I realized it was anything they considered a personal flaw. Because the thought is, in order to be liked, they had to be like everyone else.
Yes.
So that reminded me of a story called The Cracked Pot. And I love being able to share this story. It's such a fascinating way to look at the world because it's the story of a water bearer, and he has a pole across his shoulders. On either end are two pots. One is perfect. One has a crack in it. And every day he goes to the stream and he fills the pots with water and he comes back to the master's house. And by the time he gets to the master's house, the perfect pot is full to the brim. The cracked pot has lost half its contents. And day in, day out, the water bearer performs this to the point where the cracked pot one day says to the water bearer, I am so ashamed. Every day you work so hard. You go to the stream, you fill us both with water. We get back to the house and I've lost half my contents. Why do you even take me? And the water bearer said, tomorrow, when we go to the stream, I'd like you to look at the ground. And so the next day, when they return to the master's house, the water bearer says to the crackpot, how do you feel? And the crackpot says, the flowers were gorgeous, but I'm still only half full. I still feel terrible. The water bearer said, did you notice the flowers are only on one side of the path? I knew about your crack, and I planted seeds. And every day when we walk back from the stream, you watered those seeds. And thanks to you, we have these beautiful bouquets for the master's table.
Yes.
So let's just project a little bit. That's the story. But I started thinking, what if the cracked pot had used all its resourcefulness so that not a single drop could leak out? It was hiding the cracks. No one would know about it. It would arrive at the master's house so exhausted from the energy that would take that all it could do is rest up until the next day and do the same thing. That would have been its life plan. And if it succeeded, there would have been no flowers. And like the cracked pot, we try to hide our cracks, the things that make us different. And the methods used, some people take drugs, some alcohol, some fill their life with distractions of all kinds. It's all so people wouldn't notice, but whatever they're using is more unhealthy than the crack could ever be. And so, moreover, how do we know that the crack isn't the very way that we can make our contribution to the planet, the thing that makes us different? So instead of hiding what's making us different, we should cultivate those differences and celebrate those differences. If we are light beings, we can picture this now, the crack could be what lets the light shine out on the world.
This is such, I mean, you listen to this information and you think from seashells comes all of this wisdom interpreted by our guest on the program today, Michelle Hansen. It's just incredible what's there. You'll walk on the beach now, look down and see seashells and think differently about them. It's not just grab one, this is really neat, or you continue walking. You'll stop and look and you'll analyze the seashells as you're walking. We understand now the lessons, the impact that these shells have on your clients. Can you give us an example of how this wisdom affected you personally, the teacher? How have you been impacted?
Well, actually, from this delicate file clam, I was invited to be a guest speaker at my spiritualist church. And I told them I wanted to talk about feeling flawed, and I was going to read from The Cracked Pot. So at the end of the service, I asked to look at the outline because I wanted to look at the name of one of the songs they played. And when I looked at the outline, I burst out laughing because it said I was going to be reading The Crackpot. And then I realized The Crackpot, that's someone who's considered crazy, but it's because they're outside the norm. The thing that's making them different.
Yes.
But that's the very essence of how every invention, every transformation that ever occurred came from someone being outside the box. In fact, the reason this healed me is I thought back to that first radio show. No, TV show. It was the TV show where the caller asked and decided that he just had to tell me that I was an idiot. Well, back then, that was kind of appalling that I just didn't fit in his box. But after the cracked pot and the delicate file clam, I thought, my gosh, the one who is not like everyone else, the thing that's making me different, that's how I can make my contribution. And so now I would consider that a compliment. I would actually have to say thank you if someone thought I was a crackpot. That's how much it healed me.
It's just amazing, all of the stories, and you're going to want to get in touch with Michelle, read her books, read about her at her website, oceanoracle.com. Let's talk a little bit about the Wright brothers. And I know today is like a celebration. I've just reading that before I came into the studio. December 11th, 1903, the historic flight at Kitty Hawk. Any knowledge about the Wright brothers and maybe an important role that shells played in their lives?
Yes. What I was just saying about how I was healed and how every transformation and invention came from someone outside the box. Where would aviation be if the Wright brothers had listened when people were saying, hey, if man were meant to fly, God would have given him wings. So they didn't listen. They were being ridiculed, and I'm sure that hurt, but they stayed true to their dream. Now, with the Wright brothers, I don't believe in coincidence, and you're right. Today is the anniversary of that flight from Kitty Hawk. So let me tell you a story about the Wright brothers. We're very fortunate that Henry Ford has a village that he created in Michigan where he uprooted the homes and the laboratories of the inventors of his day. And so if you go to the village, you've got Thomas Edison's home with his laboratory, and not far away, the Wright brothers' home with their bike shop. And when you enter the home, there's someone there to tell you about the former occupants. When I went into the Wright brothers' home, on the mantle in their living room were three shells. And I asked, were these the actual shells of the Wright brothers? I was assured they were. Let me show you what they had.
What an amazing story. One shell. Okay, there we go. Oh, yes.
Remember the helmet cock?
Yep, helmet.
Okay, that's one shell. Another shell they had is called the Nigrite Murex. I'll explain these in a minute. And the third is the pink conch or the queen conch. It's the same shell.
Okay.
So those were their three shells. Now, the Nigrite Murex means the courage to overcome negative feelings like anger or depression. And the pink conch is listen to your heart. So it made sense with the Wright brothers being ridiculed the way they were. They would need to overcome those feelings of anger or depression with the way the public was treating them. And the listen to your heart is they chose to follow their dream. They were listening to their heart. And that would make sense. But why they have the helmet conch? Remember, it means someone willing to fight for you, an ally, a champion on your behalf. I didn't know of anyone that would fill that role, so I researched. And on the internet, I learned about this man. His name is Octave Chanute. Not too many people have heard of him, which actually is amazing when you think about it, because he was French-born. When he was like 6 years old, his parents came to the States. And when he's in his 30s and 40s, he became a civil engineer. When he's in his 50s, he retires and he gets interested in aviation, because we're talking about 1890, somewhere in there. But he's too old to be a pilot. So he takes on the role of gathering all the research that's going on with everybody else. And he writes a book. And in around 1900, the Wright brothers, who are in their 20s, contact Octave Chanute because they had read the book. And his belief, Chanute's belief was, share all the information. This is how aviation can progress. He shares everything he's learned with the Wrights. He becomes their mentor. He becomes their confidant. I mean, there are hundreds of letters being exchanged between them about everything to do with aviation. And he's with them in 1903 when they fly from Kitty Hawk. So the mentor, the confidant, that's their helmet conch.
Yes.
Now, we've got the helmet conch, the person who's there to fight for them and help them and their ally. Why would they have to overcome any kind of negative feelings around that? Well, the flight was in 1903. In 1905, the Wright brothers applied for patents for their research, and they became secretive about their work. Now, Chanute's philosophy was share with everybody. That's how we can progress aviation. And when the Wrights became secretive, he withdrew his support. They lost their mentor. That certainly could cause anger or depression.
Yes.
He pulled away. He severed the relationship. But the final shell, the listen to your heart shell, in 1910, the relationship was mending. And Chanute died shortly after that, but Wilbur Wright performed the eulogy. That's how much their relationship had mended. So those three shells were not just about healing the public ridicule and dealing with the emotions around that. It was about their relationship with Octave Chanute.
And all of those shells, each of those shells tells a story. It's amazing that you picked up on that, did the research, and a whole new chapter for the Wright brothers. Most of us have never heard about, that gentleman and what they went through, but just a fascinating story. I don't know where the time goes when you're on the program. It goes by so quickly, so much more to talk about. I was thinking as you were going through one of the discussions there, out of curiosity, what would happen if a student's guidance expanded upon the meanings assigned to the shells and ocean oracle? What would be the result of that, do you think?
Well, actually, I had a similar scenario where there's a book called Gift from the Sea. It was written by Anne Morrow Lindbergh, the wife of Charles Lindbergh, back in 1955. So it's a book about this woman who escaped to a little cabin at the beach, and she was dealing with some personal things, and the shells helped give her healing and guidance. And she wrote this book, Gift from the Sea. So you can imagine that friends and family thought this would be perfect to give me, this woman's relationship with seashells. And they would lovingly place this book in my hands. And to me, it was a ticking bomb. I did everything I could to avoid reading it. And after the first copy, that was not too hard to do. The second copy, a little more difficult. By the time I had three copies, I'm like, oh my God, this book, it's stalking me. And a woman came for a reading that day, had never read Gift from the Sea. I grabbed one of my copies and I said, please take this home with you. And that felt like a relief. Only it only lasted one day. The next day, in my mailbox, someone from Canada had mailed me a copy of Gift from the Sea. So there it was again. Now, I calmed down because I believe in a magical universe and a loving universe. And I thought, what is going on with this? And as I'm contemplating that, a dear friend called from a bookstore telling me she had the perfect gift for me. And I knew it was going to be Gift from the Sea. And I finally confessed. I said, I can't read that book. And she helped me try to figure out why. And I said, I'm afraid I'm going to be influenced one of two ways. Either I will change what I'm thinking so it matches her, or we're so different that all I can do is conclude my life's work is wrong. And that was too awful to contemplate, so I just never opened the book. And she chuckled and she said, your manuscript is on the way to the publisher. And you've been writing a column for 3 years. This is how long the Gift from the Sea had been stalking me. And she said, I think you're on record now for, you know, how you work with the shells.
Yes.
So I felt, okay, I can confront my demons. I can take a look at this book. And it was what I feared, because I was looking at her content, and she would write about the message of a shell, but it was different from the shell that I would have picked. And I thought, why is this happening? Why is it stalking me? And I finally realized it had nothing to do with the meanings of the shells. It didn't matter if we had a disagreement over the meanings. What mattered was she paved the way in the 1950s to suggest that shells can offer guidance, that shells can be teachers. And here it was decades later, and that's still a popular book. It was planting seeds. And what I realized is she was trying to support me to take the next step because she only had one beach. I had the whole world. That's why I was having different shells than she did. And now to get back to your question, I hope that people will use my work to take the next step. It's fine with me if they expand upon the meanings. The only time I ask that they stick to the meanings in Ocean Oracle is when we're in class, because we need to be on the same page so I can teach them how to do readings. But once they graduate, nothing would give me more joy than to let them have the shells speak to them and take them in whatever direction.
Interesting. And speaking about that, doing the reading, so any final thoughts as we wrap up the interview? And I'd like to talk about the books and the services that you provide, because you're not taking this knowledge and just talking about it on radio and television. You're actually teaching classes, teaching people how to do this and to take the information they get from the shells and incorporate in their personal lives. Wrap up what we've talked about in the program today and how they can reach out to you and the services you have.
They can reach out to me by using my website, which is oceanoracle.com. And they on the website, they will see more information if they want to call me. That's available there as well. Any questions, any comments, I welcome it all. Because what I'm hoping with these interviews, you saw how I was shy and I've come to this place where...
And I still can't believe that, by the way. I still can't believe that.
Because I'm fine when I'm talking about the shells. I'm comfortable talking about them.
Ah, okay.
And so that way I can be the voice of my seashell partners, the shell with a voice.
Yes.
And what I'm hoping, I'm so grateful to you for these interviews because I'm hoping that people will now look at the world differently. And so, yes, I was working with shells. They may work with rocks or plants or animals. Anything at all, when they look at the world through new eyes, I'd like them to consider sharing that because they can use my work, again, as a stepping stone and then share what they learn because that way we can all grow together. And being that this is the anniversary of the Wright brothers, I don't believe in coincidence. And when you think about Kitty Hawk, that was the most joyful time for the Wrights and Octave Chanute. They were really in collaboration at that time. I feel their energy today. This is a celebration of when they were in Kitty Hawk. And so maybe that energy is helping this information take flight.
Yes. Great way to look at that as we celebrate that. And you've given us so much information, and you can find out so much more by going to Michelle's website, which is very simple, oceanoracle.com. Her first book is Ocean Oracle, What Seashells Reveal About Our True Nature, and Ocean Wisdom, Lessons from the Seashell Kingdom. What else is included in the book Ocean Oracle? You've got a number of items that come along with the book that will help in our understanding.
Yes. So it's a boxed kit because there's the book, but there's also posters that give you a bird's eye view. It's 200 shells that are involved in this book to get a bird's eye view of the 200 shells. And then there's a deck of cards that match the poster so that by you being drawn to a certain shell, they're all numbered. All you have to do is look at the number and you can take out the matching card. And then the meaning is on the back of the card. So by combining however many get your attention and putting them in any arrangement that you like, there's no wrong way. When you turn over the cards, you can string together the messages, and that's what reveals what they want to share with you. And the messages come, as I said, from your hidden thoughts, your hidden beliefs that even if you're not aware of them, are impacting your life. And when they're brought to your awareness, you're empowered with the opportunity to change a belief that may be limiting you. If it's no longer serving you and you decide, I don't want this anymore in my life, if you change that, you change what you create in your future. So that's the value of working with it.
People find that they really enjoy exploring the language of shells by themselves or incorporating friends. This is really something where you can get a group together and really have an enjoyable time and learn something as well, isn't it?
It is. And sometimes the person may be in denial or unaware of their beliefs, but their friends are aware. And so they'll draw a shell and say, why did I get this? And their friends aren't surprised at all. And that gives them an opportunity to have that kind of conversation.
It's been so much fun having you on all of the programs. And you can find the other two programs by going to thisweekinamerica.us in the archive there. Or you can just Google it and find them there as well. And you can watch the video. That's on YouTube, readily available for everybody to watch. And see the shells as Michelle is going through the presentation. It's been a pleasure having you with us on the program. This is really so much information. And I stayed for the, it was so good, I stayed for the entire interview.
You did,
I
didn't, you stayed
I didn't,
the whole time.
Didn't walk out
I
halfway through.
That.
Even to get more coffee. I'm fascinated by what you're telling me and how it all makes so much sense and how you're able to interpret. And those interpretations are really transforming people's lives. It's just incredible what Michelle has been able to do. And my thanks to Authors Perspective Press for arranging our conversation. Authors Perspective Press is a forward-thinking hybrid publishing company at the nexus of innovation and strategy, dedicated to guiding authors through the intricate landscape of publishing and marketing. That's authorsperspectivepress.com. Michelle, it's been so much fun, and you'll learn so much more from Michelle by going to our website. It's very simple, oceanoracle.com. Thank you once again for being with us on the program.
I thank you so much.
It has been a pleasure, such an enjoyable period of time, 60 minutes that we've gone on the program today, because there is so much information there, and it's available to you by going to our website, order the book, get more information, order the books or get more information, oceanoracle.com, or go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, a direct link. You're listening to This Week in America, back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.